This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by My Music Staff.
With students, it's important just to say, hey, you know what? When you're in a group setting, just like with an orchestra piece, there are times you play, there are times you rest. The rests are as important.
Pianists are really bad at doing that.
I think musicians are anyway.
Yeah, maybe we all are.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 4, 2018 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and if this is your first time here, thank you so much for tuning in. You're listening to episode number 143, and a special welcome to all my Inner Circle Piano Teaching community members. The Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is your home for inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies to help support your teaching and grow your studio. Today's episode is designed to help those teachers who might be living a double life as a worship pianist or music leader, or those who want to help their own students to be able to play comfortably in both worship settings and also more generally in bands. I've got a great guest who I'll introduce in just a moment. We'll be talking about things like the roles of a worship team pianist, how to build some of those required skills for playing in bands, what's expected of pianists in band situations, and some common mistakes. Today's show notes and a full transcript are now available at timtopham.com/episode143. My guest today is an ordained Anglican priest and worship leader in Denver, Colorado, who writes and arranges music for the church. He has spent 20 years leading worship and training worship leaders and musicians. He earned his BA in music from the University of Northern Colorado and his MA in ministry leadership from Crown College. He's a singer, a songwriter, a liturgist. He lives with his wife and daughter in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the show, Drew.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Well, look, I've heard so much about you from our beautiful mutual friend in Leila Viss, who lives quite near you, I think, in Colorado. And I think you guys work together at your church. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, a few years ago, I started by running sound at South Suburban Christian Church. Leila has been the organist there for, I want to say, going on 16 years. And I found just a treasure in Leila as I kind of moved through the ranks and ended up taking over the entire worship arts program. I just realized that I had a gem in her. She is incredibly talented. She speaks basically every dialect of piano that there is. She cares about her craft and she's an excellent educator. So it really was, she's probably the best person I've worked with on the keyboard in all of my time as a worship leader.
Wow, that is a beautiful thing to hear. And I know Leila will be listening, so hi, Leila. And now, this show isn't all about Leila Viss, as much as it would be fun to do a show on Leila. We're talking today about helping both teachers and pianists and teachers support pianists in regard to playing in bands and playing in worship and church situations. So can you give us people a little bit of your background, especially how you became involved in that kind of worship music leading?
Yeah, you bet. You know, I first got involved with music by singing. I sang kind of through junior high, sang through high school and beyond that. But the transition into worship leading happened almost through the back door. I thought at some point during high school that I might want to be involved in music education. Started playing guitar when I was a junior in high school, so my second to last year in secondary, and realized that there might be something to that for me personally as far as some sort of gifting or skill set that might transfer into the church. So then I went to music school initially in music education. Moved through that process a bit and ended up realizing that what I really had at the core was a desire to become a worship leader. So then in college, I said, you know what, rather than pursuing an education track, I just want to put as many tools in my toolbox as I can to become a really good worship leader for the church. Now, I mean, jury's out on whether that was accomplished or not. But I'll tell you what, in the meantime, there's been a lot of opportunity to work with some good musicians and several developing musicians. And that's kind of where I found my niche.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. And so you've always, were you brought up in the church as, in your family as well?
You know, I was raised as a preacher's kid. So they either become a hellion or an angel. I'm not sure I kind of hit either of those, but somewhere in the middle I landed.
What's a hellion? I don't even know what that is.
Kind of a spawn of Satan, I think. You
know? Oh, like a not believer. Okay.
Yeah, just kind of go off the rails and lose any sense of grounding. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so I was brought up in a church family as well. Although over here in Australia, you know, it's a little bit different, I think, to the United States. But I've also gone on to play. Although I'm not a regular churchgoer myself. I have gone on to work in a lot of Christian schools and church and Catholic schools as well. And so I've done a lot of this playing of music services and masses and those kinds of occasions. And I find that, yeah, there's definitely a skill set that's needed. And of course, different churches require different things. Some have organs, some have pianos. But what are those main responsibilities for the worship pianist?
You know, some of the responsibilities are the same as for any member of the worship band. Things like being committed to practicing on your own, and developing your craft, continuing to work on your own skill set and listen to a lot of music to expand your palate. But when it comes to worship music, I think it's really important to identify the difference between worship piano and worship keys.
Because let's talk about that.
Yeah, the approach changes for each one of those roles. And that's something that really is different, especially for students who've grown up playing piano, and for teachers who are working with students at the piano. It's almost like what's required of them is to know different dialects within the language of music. With piano, for example, it sits within the rhythm section of the band. So piano needs to really pay attention to their role within the band. Are they driving the song instrumentally? Because with almost every worship song, it's a guitar or a piano that's driving the music.
Right, yeah.
So recognizing that role, do they need to drive the song instrumentally, or are they rhythmic and harmonic support, or are they just working on riffs and leads? So that's just for the piano part. The difference then with keyboard is all about atmosphere. So you're playing a synth part, some sort of string or a pad or something that just creates atmosphere.
Okay.
So that's one of the main differences even to recognize as far as the responsibilities of a worship pianist is that there are two dialects almost right off the bat that are really sought after, which is the ability both to play a melody line with chording, but then also to move over to something maybe that they haven't played before, which is a lot of sustained notes, a lot of stuff within an octave. You know, a lot of simple work, but that adds a lot of atmosphere to what's going on.
Right. And when do you tend to use that kind of atmospheric? I'm picturing synths and strings and those kinds of things. When in a service is that required?
You know, almost at the same time that you would hear in a movie.
Right. Okay.
When there are major transition points in a service, or for example, when you get to the end of a sermon, and it's time for some sort of response, whatever that might be. Often, whether it's articulated or not on behalf of those who are leading the service, they'll turn to the pianist and they'll say, this is what I need here.
Right.
Whether that's kind of the look that you just get all of a sudden.
That wouldn't be necessarily stated, would it?
Yeah, exactly. Or whether that's hopefully for folks who have done it for a while, hopefully they'll communicate that ahead of time. But it's usually major transition points. You know, historically, those were things like service music where the organist would play the Gloria or the Doxology or some arrangement of an Amen. But in the church now, a lot of times it's setting the mood to bridge from one part of the service into the next part of the service.
So I was wondering is it a good idea then that the pianist asks the worship leader before the service to kind of go through, okay, well, so obviously we need this hymn or this song at these places, but to then say, okay, where do you need me to just fill in some some time, and what kind of style do you need? Is that something that you would expect the pianist to ask you?
You know, in by way of experience, I would say that I wouldn't necessarily expect that, except from someone who is familiar with that kind of playing. Honestly, I found as a worship leader, it's beneficial to be more articulate on the front end with folks and to let them know, here's kind of what we're looking for, to walk through something like a service order with them, especially if it's not a typical gig. After a little while, someone who's on the piano or on synth will know how a typical service unfolds, what the flow is. But even then, I make it a point now. I start every rehearsal on Sunday morning by saying, hey, here's what the songs look like. Here's what the transition points look like, so that the whole band is aware of what to anticipate. And then I found that at this point, I really expect my musicians to come into a Sunday morning 95% prepared on their own, so that really we're not learning chords, we're not learning lyrics, we're tightening up musicality on a Sunday morning. So then I'll be able to come to them and say, hey, pay attention to this point in the service. This is where we're doing something different. And it's not mind blowing for them. They're just thinking, okay, I just need to be heads up at that point.
Right. It reminds me of when I've conducted school bands in the past, and I would always say, okay, now this is the time for us to be rehearsing our musicality together, not practicing your parts.
That's exactly, you know, it's the same conversation, but at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Oh my goodness. You do it at 7 a.m. on a Sunday. When do you have your services?
We have, it's really strange how we have it set up. We have a traditional service that takes place at 9 a.m. And then we have a contemporary service with the band that takes place at 10:30. So we have two drastically different styles on one Sunday morning.
Right. But that's good because it suits different community members.
You know, it does. It really draws in different demographics. And that's kind of a niche for us, in particular in the Denver metro area, is that we offer both with excellence. And a huge part of that, obviously, is Leela, because it's someone who knows classical repertoire and can sit on the organ and then can transition to lead sheets, which I think for a lot of your listeners is something that they want to be able to do. They want to have the classical base and be able to have the foundational language of music, but also speak different dialects within that framework.
Mm. Well, and for most of my listeners, the classical side of things wouldn't be so difficult. If they're given a piece of music that they need to play as written, and that's perhaps of a more traditional nature, that's not so difficult. It's more what you said before, that stretch over to the lead sheets, but also you've mentioned too that ability to play with a band, and you mentioned the fact that the piano is in the rhythm section. And it really, I mean, my own experience is that in some ways, it's really hard to prepare for that experience. You kind of just have to be thrown in and put your hand up and say, you know what, anything could happen here, but I'm just going to try it out and kind of get the feeling of how it's going to work and listen to the drums. And one of the hardest things for pianists is to play with other people, because we're so used to being soloists and working at our in our own studio. So have you got any tips for how pianists can really get in the groove and feel the rest of the rhythm section and not feel like they've got to lead it or how to stay in time, I guess.
Yeah, that is one of the big transitions for someone who is used to playing their primary instrument as a solo instrument. Then to step into a setting where there are all kinds of other musicians, there's a lot of things going on, not only harmonically, but rhythmically, melodically, and saying, okay, what is my role within this broader framework? So when I've worked with a new piano player in the band, one of the first things that I've said to each person is, hey, there are three different major roles for piano in a worship team. I said, and I would say, hey, the one you're most familiar with is essentially playing the entire piece. So covering the rhythmic foundation, covering the harmonies, covering the melody line, really driving the song. So that's the first role. But the second one is more of a support role, where instead of leading the entire song, you're just adding, perhaps in the support role, harmonic foundation to the song. you know, doing similar things to what the guitar is doing, but with a different timbre. So it's just adding, it's adding more color to the piece. Mm-hmm. The final one then being, and this happens a lot, especially with pop driven songs, is you're coming in on one section of a song anytime it shows up, like a chorus, and you're just playing a handful of notes. And that is almost just a completely different language for someone who is growing up playing Chopin and Debussy and Bach. Right. It's like, wait, hold on.
Thousands of notes.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the biggest things that I talk with someone who's playing piano, as I say, hey, it's a little different dialect. Here are three of the big words you need to know.
Yes.
Drive, support, accent. What's your role?
Drive, support, and accent. So let's just go over those once more. So in the drive role, you're playing the whole thing, both hands,
yep,
probably as written, and you're you're the rhythm and the bass and everything together.
Yes.
Your second one was lead. Is that right?
Oh, the next one is support.
Support, sorry. So that's where they might actually be flipping over to a string sound and filling in some harmonies in the middle. Would that be the kind of thing?
Yeah, that would be one of two examples, especially if you're playing more of a keyboard as compared to a piano. If you're playing piano in a support role, then, for example, on the verse of a song, you would be playing chords just on chord changes. You know, mm-hmm. So in the left hand, it would be, you know, octaves or root fifth octave. And in the right hand, it's just a triad.
Yep.
And you're kind of hitting those on the changes as opposed to kind of playing everything.
Got it. So I'd call that like an accompaniment style.
Yeah, perfect.
Chord accompaniment style, yep. And then the last one, what did you call the last one, sorry?
The last one is more of an accent. And it's similar to having, you know, if you have a single violinist or something like that, it's more of an accent instrument where you may not want to use it across the whole of a 30-minute music set. But there are specific spots where adding that little bit just transforms the experience. And sometimes the piano or the keyboard is used in that role. It's, hey, on songs 2 and 3, there's just this little part that's going to add so much to what's going on. And that's, like I say, that's a very different way to think about the instrument.
Mm. And I'd say one of the tips we could give teachers and teachers helping students is to help students realize that if they're playing with another instrument, to listen to what the sounds of the other instrument are and the register that they're playing in, and make sure that they're not necessarily doubling up. And so I find that a lot of the time when my students first join a jazz band, maybe they're used to playing octaves in the left hand, it's actually, you know, the first thing I say is, you know what? The bass player's doing all that. You actually don't need to do any of that anymore, right? And that is a really hard thing for pianists.
Yes. You could almost, I actually tell my keyboarders the same thing.
Yeah, like sit on your left hand or something, don't you?
Yeah, something. Yeah, duct tape it to the rest of your hand, sit on it, whatever you need to do. Because you're right, because one of the things that's different from playing solo piano to playing inside a band is that there are a lot of instruments involved across the frequency spectrum.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, because the piano has so much range, really what I find is most of the time in a worship setting, the piano's playing in the middle register by and large. You're right. The pinky on the left hand is almost useless in a worship set unless the piano is driving the song.
Mm. And but in that lead role. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. But besides that, it's the bass guitar is covering what most of the left hand would do anyway. And so it's kind of finding the spot. And that's probably another thing that I tell folks is listen to the music. Listen to the music. Because what you'll hear as you start developing your ear is you'll hear what the guitars are doing, what the bass is doing, what the kit is doing. So to be able to match up with what's going on rhythmically, but then also just sonically across the spectrum, it's really about in a band finding your niche and finding what contributes to the song more than saying, well, I play piano, so I'm playing for every song, which I think it gets to just kind of basic musicality anyway, right? With students, it's important just to say, hey, you know what? When you're in a group setting, just like with an orchestra piece, there are times you play, there are times you rest. The rests are as important.
Pianists are really bad at doing that.
I think musicians are anyway.
Yeah, maybe we all are. You've mentioned listening twice now, and I want to come back to that because one of the challenges I find with my students is that although they want to play rock or funk or jazz, they very rarely listen to any of those styles of music. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a real it's a real letdown in their development, I guess. And as much as I encourage it, they really struggle to do it. So they'll say, yeah, cool, I want to do jazz because that sounds cool. And we'll go and listen to some, and it'll be really quite foreign to them. They don't actually really know about it. So would you recommend for pianists or teachers helping pianists who are going to be moving into this band or worship or church situation that they go and listen to some music? And if so, what music should they listen to?
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many possibilities now, so many ways that folks can listen to music that there's really not an excuse.
No, there isn't. It's just,
you know, if there's an interest in a particular genre, there's not really an excuse at this point to say, but I don't really know anything about it.
Right. That's true.
On the front end, that's okay. But, you know, to say, hey, I know there are resources out there. I just haven't interacted with them yet. But at a certain point, it really is on the student to say, if this is something that I love and another dialect I want to speak, I better start listening. For example, I'm all about personal development and just continuing to learn. So for the last few years, I've been listening to a lot of blues. It's not what I do on Sunday mornings, by and large. But listening to over and over the different takes on a 12-bar progression has informed the way that I play when I'm improvising on a Sunday morning with Leela or with the band, or just how I approach my own arrangement of a piece. So for students to listen, I would say, boy, get a Spotify account, listen to whatever you can, listen to, if there's a genre, just immerse yourself in it and spend time with that. Listen to what's going on. We use Planning Center at the church that we're at, and it's an online interface that does both scheduling, but also does service preparation. So it'll send out even automated reminders weekly of, hey, you have this coming up. Here's when the rehearsal is. Here's when the service is. But the great thing is I'm able to upload MP3s and say, hey, we're doing this song in this key. And they can listen to it in the car and listen to what's going on musically. And it really, really helps. While that's obviously specific to the worship genre, it just helps folks listen to, hey, what's going on with the piano inside of this broader sound?
Right. And I don't think a discussion about this topic would be complete without mentioning Hillsong. Is Hillsong something that you guys are familiar with? That's not Australian, is it? Or maybe it started in Australia.
You know, surprisingly, they've made their way around the world. Yeah. They're the trendsetters.
Yeah. And look, you know, I don't go to a Hillsong church. And as I mentioned, it's not something that I regularly do. But I tell you what, if I ever flip through a channel and there's Hillsong playing, it's amazingly engaging music. You're kind of singing along. You get swept up in that music very, very quickly. It's incredibly well written, I think. And of course, the spectacle's amazing. What's your thoughts on it as a musician?
You know, one of the things that they've done that's really impressive is that there was this whole genre of worship music that kind of came into its own sort of at the late 60s, early 70s, even before I was around. Mm-hmm. But at some point, there were a handful of musicians within the church who picked up the baton, the legacy that has been passed down through sacred music, and said, how can we communicate this now? And there were a handful of folks who said, whatever we do, we want to do it with excellence. And you look back at that now, 30, 40 years ago, and you say, wow, it's become its own industry. There are obviously upsides and downsides to that. But with a group like Hillsong, about 15 years ago, they really heard a valid critique of church music saying, hey, you guys are writing essentially pop music, but you've lost all depth when it comes to what you're doing lyrically.
Right.
Like, sing something that matters. Sing something that gives us some sort of an anchor point in the week, which is really important because anybody who goes to a church service, they'll remember 100 songs to one sermon. So it matters almost much more what we sing than what somebody says. And so they really took, I feel like they did a great job of taking up that challenge and saying, what can we write that has both lyrical interest and depth, but also that musically is engaging? So they write really good hooks. All of their melodies are singable for a large group of people. And that's something that's different than pop. Like, nobody can hang out with Ed Sheeran. It's just impossible, right?
Right.
But you can sing any Hillsong tune.
Yeah. And that's what captures people so well, right?
That's right. It's something that they've done that's brilliant. And the cool thing is they have enough musicians that when it gets to their piano players and their keyboardists, they have three or four people playing on a particular instrument. But what they're doing is they're all taking little parts of the sound.
Right. So someone might be on a synth, someone's on string, someone's adding a little trumpet or something or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, then the role becomes even more complex. But I don't think we're talking to too many Hillsong band players here. Do let me know if you are, because that is pretty impressive, I got to say. Anyway, what I wonder if we could do is just maybe summarize the characteristics that you look for in a pianist. Are there kind of one, two, or three key things that teachers and pianists need to really get themselves ahead of before they kind of take on one of these roles?
Well, let me ask you something, Tim. Would you be interested in hearing kind of as far as skill set or as far as like characteristics of the person?
Let's do characteristics and then we can dive down into just a few key skills too. And then we can talk more about that in regard to how we're teaching our kids as well, because I want to get onto that too.
You bet. You bet. Well, as far as characteristics of the person, I would say, it's not a common word used these days, but meekness.
Right. Okay.
Like nobody uses that language, but essentially that's a combination of both confidence and humility. If you're going to play in public, you got to be confident in what you're doing. Cause at some point everybody's going to shut up and they're going to look at you. So you need to have a certain level of confidence to go and do what you do. But there's also humility that's necessary because worship music is a team sport. So it's really what I find a pretty cool balance, because when you do things like a piano recital, it's you. Folks are paying attention to what you're doing. When you play in worship music and there's a band involved, the idea is to bring the best of what you do into a team setting, into a team environment. And so you kind of need both of those things. You need to be a person who's meek.
Yeah, it's an interesting use of that word. When I hear the word meek, and no doubt you've looked up the definition because I couldn't give it to you, but meek to me means perhaps a little bit shy and withdrawn. But if it more has that idea of confident and yet with humility, I think that is the perfect word, because you're absolutely right.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is the Bible says that Jesus was meek.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a dude who whipped people in the temple and told them to stop overcharging folks for things like doves. You know, right. I mean, right. he really got after it. He was something of an insurrectionist. He challenged the culture of the day, and he was described as meek. So that, I think that's one thing that folks will kind of miss in that, is just there's a strength involved and a courage involved in being meek. The fact that, especially considering things like our current political situation here in the States, that there's a greater depth of strength that's reflected in being able to let something slide when someone looks to offend you at times for the better of the group and the community than feeling like you always have to punch back. You know, so when it comes to that ability as a musician, it's the ability both to work hard so that you really can rightfully have confidence in who you are as a musician, but then knowing that there's really a joy that comes in offering your best to the team. So there's that. And then a couple of things, punctuality.
Yeah. Okay.
Who knew that would matter for a musician, right?
Yeah.
Normally that's more of a problem for drummers and bass players.
Careful. I know some listen. I know what you mean. But I tell you what, I would be struggling at 7 a.m. to be at the church at 7 a.m. on a Sunday. But anyway,
I'm a little bit shocked that they haven't run me out of the building at this point.
I'm amazed you've got anyone turning up at all.
Yeah. Just being on time. Again, because it's a team sport, just showing up ready to go, it speaks volumes to your other team members. And so there really is something to that. And the part of why I say this is because I work with musicians who are 20 years older than me, and I work with musicians who are 20 years younger than me. And one of the coolest transformations I've seen happen, especially with younger musicians, is seeing this sense of ownership take over for them. That they're being given the opportunity to play music with musicians who have been doing it for a while and who really are legitimately talented people. So there's this transformation that happens for them, that they, when they show up and they say, oh, those guys care about what I do. They care about the preparation time I've put in. They care that I show up on time. And so it really does make a difference for them. And the last thing I'd say is just a mindset of always looking to improve our craft. For a long time, there was this idea that if you're a church musician, you're going to play four chords anyway. So who really cares?
Yeah, right.
But the thing, groups like Hillsong and Elevation, all these folks have really raised the bar on the level of musicianship required, even if you're going to cover one of their songs. So it's really cool to see this, like, hey, if I want to be part of a quality worship team, I've really got to be good at what I do.
And that means constantly learning, updating, challenging yourself. Yeah. Which of course is what I'm really passionate about helping teachers with. So and I hope everyone is like that, even if they don't play in a worship situation, because that's what really keeps us inspired and able to help our children as best we can to our students.
Now, a quick word from our sponsor, My Music Staff. Most of you have already heard about My Music Staff and how their software helps thousands of music teachers manage their businesses more efficiently. They handle all of your student management issues, scheduling, billing, and so much more. It's what I personally use in my own studio, and it's no surprise why it's the leading studio management software. What I think really makes My Music Staff stand out is its community-driven development and personal approach to customer support. It was such a pleasant surprise jumping into My Music Staff for the first time and realizing how in tune it was with my business and the ins and outs of a music studio. Since they partner with the music community to develop their software, they've been able to anticipate what teachers need and are constantly improving their software to exceed expectations. And a more recent example of responding to community feedback was the addition of a very popular feature, streaming video and audio files directly within the My Music Staff app. And that means that no longer do you have to download files to your device. So it makes it incredibly easy to share content with your students. My Music Staff is super easy to get up and running. The transition away from paper and spreadsheets is painless. If you do need help, the quality of support is second to none, and you'll always get a fully personalized response. I have yet to see the level of attention and care I receive from My Music Staff provided by any other software platforms I use, and I use a lot of software in my business. So what have you got to lose? Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial today.
So let's just talk about the role of us as teachers and some of those skills that we should be imparting if we want to give our students the best chance to work in a band in the future?
That's a great question. When a teacher is looking at working with someone who wants to move down the road as far as their musicianship and saying, hey, can I actually consider this as a career opportunity or even as a pretty viable side gig? There are a few things that I would say as a worship leader to teachers, to educators. And I would say that one of the big things, and I think you talked about this actually in one of your blog posts, was the idea of being an all-rounder. That teachers who focus, if they focus on that concept, then they are training potential career musicians. It really is true. You know, if they're teaching their students to speak the dialects of both a classical repertoire and chord charts, that student is going to be really marketable. Not only that, they're honestly probably going to have a lot more fun in learning the instrument because there's just variety and there's challenge and there's nuance to what they're doing. Right. So I would say just kind of having that baseline approach of saying, for any students that show the interest, I want to help them be all-rounders.
Exactly.
Another concept that can really help is to emphasize sections within a piece, regardless of genre. So when a teacher is working with a student, to be able to say in a Bach piece, do you notice this is the A section? Listen to this theme. Now, do you hear how things change, whether it's the tonality, it goes from major to minor, or it modulates, or it does something different to say, okay, here's the B section. Now go back to the A section. To speak in sectional forms with a student, regardless of genre, really sets them up to understand what's going on if they have the opportunity to step into even a youth worship team, because every chord chart or every lead sheet will say verse, chorus, bridge, intro, turnaround. It's all about knowing the sections of the songs and then how those sections relate.
That is really interesting. It's not one that I would have ever guessed you would say, but so important. And it's another reason why I love pulling apart music with my students. And it's great you mentioned Bach, Beethoven. I mean, all of these pieces, they're complex, but they're built on chord charts, basically, somewhere back in the harmonic structure. And they're definitely built in sections. So being able to pull that out with your students at every moment you can, I think is so, so good. It also gives them new starting places for their practice too. So they're not always going back to the top.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because even on Sunday mornings, what we'll do is, we'll have a rehearsal and we'll work a song as a whole. But then when we have our turnaround before the service, we've got about a 30-minute window. And what we do is we practice transitions.
And what do you mean by the transitions?
So sometimes it'll be within a song, and it's maybe something that I know is a little bit tricky for the band as a whole or for the vocalist, and I'll say, hey, let's work the transition going from the verse to the chorus in this song, because dynamically there's some interest there that we need to pull out. Or it'll be the transition from song to song. I would say with a student on an individual piece, it's usually the spot where their fingers start to fumble. You know, and you say, hey, work that transition, work that 4 bars, work that 8 bars so that you feel comfortable. You know, when you get to the page turn, you can just do that fluidly. It's the same idea. So if teachers pay attention to that within a classical piece, it becomes more of an easy crossover then back and forth to say, oh, it's this section. What does this section do? And then how do I get to the next section? And what's different about that?
And it might be A and B and rondo and all that in classical music. Mm-hmm. In modern music, it might be verse, chorus. It might be section 1, 2.
That's right.
So it's just great to use all these different phrases and terms. Yeah, simple thing that we can all do. That's a great one, Drew.
Yeah. You know, there's one more I'd probably say, and it's just learning the fundamentals of the language of music. Regardless of where, you know, of a teacher's particular philosophy or methodology, for students to have that foundation of knowing how to read music, I think is so, so valuable, because then you can build on top of it. Because reading a chord chart with absolutely no notes, that's a whole different dialect. It's still the same language, but if your fingers don't know what to do when they see lyrics and the letter A above the lyric, it can get a little bit nerve-wracking.
Right, yeah.
But having that foundation to work from, you know, I actually taught freshman theory at the undergraduate level for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I would have students who would walk in the door on the first day who were classically trained pianists. They had been playing for a decade. Then I would have garage band guitarists walking in the door, and both groups of students wanted to be worship leaders. So the challenge for me was to say, how do I help each of these different groups speak the other dialect?
One of the things that I love doing with my students too, and all my listeners will know about my love of chords, chord charts, lead sheets, and those kinds of things. When I do composing with students on chord progressions, I love using a second. So I've got two instruments behind me, and one of them is a digital keyboard, and it has great synth and string pads. And one of those roles that you mentioned earlier was the ability to fill in the harmony and just hold some chords on a long sound. We're not used to doing this as pianists unless you've played keys. So I really enjoy giving my students the chance to do that. And so if they've created a little 4-chord progression, instead of banging it out on the piano, 4 chords, you know, 4 beats per bar, I'll get them to go over to the synth, choose a string pad, and just hold these chords. And I think that's something that if you have 2 instruments in your studio, you could definitely give students the opportunity to do that. Because I found that I would do it all myself, and I suddenly thought, well, why aren't I teaching my students how to do this? So we swap jobs.
that's really awesome, because I think one of the things for someone who who's growing up playing piano, when they move over to that keyboard role, it can get really boring within about 8 bars, because they're thinking, I'm not really doing anything. But to be able to shift mindsets and think and realize that there really is an atmosphere role, that you're filling a different slot within the frequency spectrum, you're adding something to the music that a melody line is not doing. It's really cool to see that happen. Plus, it helps students engage when they say, oh, if I modulate, that same progression still carries. And it adds something of depth to it. It works really well for teachers. One of the things that I've found when folks are learning kind of both of those frameworks within a worship setting is I'll have my keyboard players or my piano players focus on playing entire worship songs with their right hand doing triads, but within an octave.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically learning chord inversions. But a lot of times what happens is in the role of a synth or something like that, they're actually supporting the harmonies of the vocals. So smooth voice leading comes out of just playing in the right hand within that octave, instead of jumping from a C root chord all the way up to an F, and it feels disjointed.
But when
a student who's learning just to play off chords focuses on one song, and typically it's 4 maybe 5 chords, and focuses on playing all of those chords within that octave, all of a sudden they realize, oh, there's something going on here where these notes, they're not moving much, but they're moving enough that there's momentum to what's happening.
Yeah, great advice. And for teachers who are listening who are unsure about the lead sheet style of playing, we actually did a great webinar. It was my most popular webinar last month with Forrest Kinney, who came on, and he gave us some incredible ideas and insights about this approach and how to get started. So if that's of interest, we'll pop in the show notes a link to a replay of that webinar that you can watch anytime. Check it out. If this is all new to you, there is lots of resources to help you, which I can share with you. So do check those out. All right, Drew, I want to get on to just a couple of challenges that I've heard teachers ask me about in just a moment. But before that, two quick things. Was there any other, I think we've kind of covered it, but just common things that church leaders will expect of a pianist that they'll kind of know? Obviously, yes, they can read a chord chart. We've talked about their ability to listen to the rest of the band. Is there anything we've missed there?
You know, there are a few things that church leaders will look to for a pianist, not many of which they're maybe even able to articulate well.
Okay.
Until you're in the moment and they give you that look and you think, oh no, I'm supposed to be doing something. But depending on the church, you know, some churches, they kind of move on the spectrum between being really high church liturgical settings where everything happens on the organ to full on rock band, and everything happens with 2 fingers for the keyboard player. Right. Depending on the church, if it's more of a traditional setting, I would say it'd be great for whoever's playing the piano to be able to have in the back pocket 10 standard familiar hymns, as well as a couple service music pieces like the doxology, like the Gloria, that they just have at the ready, as well as then probably from their training anyway, something that would work for a prelude and postlude. In a traditional service, it's not uncommon for the keyboard player to start the service, play something that folks will sing along to at some point, and then end the service. So those are great things to have. I've watched Leela do this a lot. She walks in with her iPad, and she has a library loaded on her iPad of maybe up to 100 pieces, maybe fewer, but she's able to just scroll through and pull up these pieces that she'll have at the ready that she's familiar with. So it's a lot of prep work ahead of time at some point. But even if you jump in and you haven't played before, and you just jump in, boy, just grab a hymnal and look at which ones land in the first 50 pages.
All right, yeah.
Walk in the door with a couple of those ready to go, and you're off to a good start.
Yeah, just grab the book, chuck it on the table and see which page it opens to. That's the most common
one. Aim for the front. Yeah, aim for the front, unless it's Christmas time. You know, I think in more modern settings, honestly, as far as baseline things to know would be just know your chord inversions within a key. Because I'll tell you what, you can fill 10 minutes of sound by playing octaves in the left hand and chord inversions in the right hand.
And just holding the left hand,
yeah,
and moving between chord inversions. Yeah, that's my go-to filling a space in a service.
Well, that's the thing that I found, because I come to piano as a second language. I primarily sing and play guitar.
Mm.
One of the challenges I took on myself about a decade ago was to say, you know what? I want to be able to lead from the piano, and I want to be able to fill in those transition spots in a service. Mm. And I took that on as a challenge and just started going with even one worship song that I was familiarizing myself with, making sure I knew the melody in the right hand, and at least could find my way with octaves in the left hand. And I'll tell you what, you take time to let the phrases breathe and just play through one section, even the chorus progression, and you can get a lot of time out of just doing that.
Mm. That's a great tip, because one of those questions I do get asked a lot about by teachers is, oh, what do I play in those quiet moments when the church leader says, play something, just play something.
That's right. Play anything. And that's
exactly it. Just play something. Fill the space.
Yeah, as if that's something normal to do.
Right. Well, you know, I would like to think that my students, I love challenging them. The first thing they do when they come in for a lesson, not always, but I love doing this, is I just say, all right, I want you to play me something in F major. Go. And just to see what they do. And, you know, they used to look at me like I was from another planet, but now they go, all right, I can do this. What are some of the main chords? Yeah, all right, let's get a bit of a rhythm and let's play something. And it's remarkable. If you just do it enough, hopefully that becomes less of a terrifying experience for students.
You know, Tim, that's actually brilliant that you do that, because I've done some songwriting as well. And one of the hardest things to do is to say, sit down for 5 minutes and write a song.
Right. Well, that's a scary thing, though, because you've used the words write a song. That's I kind of just go, you know, just play something.
Well, but that's the thing. If you give parameters to it, like you did with your example, you said, hey, play something in the key of F. Mm. Often that much direction, just putting those boundaries on it. You don't have to try and pick a key. Here's your key.
Yes.
You know, yeah, and exactly. If students are learning what are the primary chords within that key. Just even walking in the door, you know, say one of your students for the first time is asked to fill some time in a service.
Yeah.
I'd go with exactly what you said. Hey, plan to play something in the key of G. And if they sit down at the piano and just think, okay, we're in the key of G, that often is enough to get the fingers started and to get the creativity going, where it's like, I don't have to try and pick from everything that's going on. I've got one key.
Exactly. And particularly, as you say, if they know those primary chords and they can quickly work them out, then they're away. They can go for it. And if your students are really just starting this, then give them those primary chords. Give them the primary triads in a key and give them a beat and see what they can do with it. So, look, there's lots of ways to do it. And I know I don't know how the time has gone so quickly. We're almost at sort of 45, 50 minutes. So I want to start wrapping things up. I was going to ask you about organ playing, because you've mentioned that, but I have a feeling that's just another whole language, another whole topic. Is there any just quick things would you say about organ playing if suddenly a teacher is asked to play an organ?
You know, good luck.
No, yeah.
not really. And what I would say is this, is that while it's true that there aren't a lot of churches these days, you know, more and more churches aren't looking for an organist, they're looking for a piano player or a keyboardist. However, for the people who do have an interest in the organ and have the skill set, those people are going to be highly sought after.
Mm.
Churches who know they want an organist, they're often willing to pay for an organist. And if you have the skill set of being able to move from organ to piano and do both well, which most organists do, that just increases the opportunity that's there, because there aren't many people who can kind of cross genres that way.
I learned organ when I was younger, so I'm very lucky to have both those skills as well. But you know, maybe I'll have to start a blog for helping organ students, because it's a real challenge. It's another whole instrument. There's no doubt about that. I would say if you want just one piece of advice, because the pedals are really hard to use if you've never practiced with them, look for the button that couples the keyboard with the pedals. And then it's the best shortcut I've ever been shown, because that means that the sounds that you make with your fingers on the keys will sound like they're coming from the pedals. Just a little trick. Don't tell anyone else though. Okay. So look, Drew, I reckon we might just finish up with, have you got a top five, top three steps to becoming a successful worship pianist? Maybe we can kind of summarize things that way.
Yeah, that sounds great. For a top five list, I'd probably... It looks to me like it might be a top four, but I would say work on the skills of learning to read both sheet music and chord charts. And I say chord charts in particular because it's a little different than lead sheet, right? It's just lyrics and
chords. Chord,
yeah, chords above. Mm. So that's one of the best things that someone can do to become a successful worship pianist. The other thing is, as I mentioned, practice playing a worship song with all the chord changes in the right hand inside one octave. It's smooth voice leading that is really one of the dominant things that happens in the piano in worship music. There's not a lot of using expansive movements within the register. It's often pretty tightly confined. So just knowing how to do a lot of little things well in a little amount of space on the keyboard. Then again, I think I touched on this towards the beginning of the podcast, but knowing your role for each song. When I have my keyboardist listen to what's coming up for a Sunday, I emphasize that. Know your role. Are you driving the song? Are you in more of a support role? Are you just doing accent stuff? Because that really informs how they even should listen to the song to prepare.
And we can go back to that three steps that you told us earlier on, which we'll pop in the show notes, just to those three roles, a little overview. That'll be good.
Yeah. And the final one I say is just listen to the genre. The nice thing is, because of groups like Hillsong and others, there's really well-produced and really dynamic music out there. Mm-hmm. A lot of creative stuff that's going on that, surprise, surprise, moves beyond four chords.
Yeah, right. And so, you can see it all on YouTube too. You can watch it being performed.
You really can. You really can. So I think for someone who wants to get into it, just listening to it and listening to how the keyboard is used in similar ways to what they already know, and then also how it's used differently to what they're used to.
Mm, great way to sum it up. So, and I think you've got some music as well that you've created and composed. Can you tell people about where they can find out more about your resources?
You bet. You know, I tend to keep something of a low profile on the internet, mostly because I'm witness protection. No, that's not true. But a few years ago, I did a project just within my local church. As it turns out, aside from being a musician, I'm also an ordained Anglican priest. So at this Anglican church, I recorded seven songs that essentially gave the broad strokes of a Sunday service. And it's called Songs for the Liturgy. So you can find that on Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. Just go to Bandcamp and type in my name, Drew Collins, and that album, Songs for the Liturgy, will come up. Otherwise, folks could go to our church website for a handful of sermons and a really great beard pick. So that's something that folks...
I beg your pardon, a what?
A beard pick.
Beard, like your...
Yes.
Okay, now I wasn't going to say anything, but Drew, for those who are listening, Drew, do you have the term hipster over there?
Unfortunately, yes.
So you would fit into Melbourne just beautifully. Drew has the most beautiful... He looks like he's just stepped out of a salon. His hair swept back on the top, short at the sides. He's got quite a long beard, sort of mid-length beard, I guess. You would just fit in beautifully here behind a coffee machine, even better, and riding a fixie bike.
That's I think I missed my calling.
And
honestly,
you own a brewery too.
Yeah, I should probably be making craft brews.
Yeah, totally. You fit the mold beautifully.
Yeah. But anyway, folks, honestly, if folks have follow-up questions or something they want to know more about, my email address at the church is on our website. It's southsuburban.com. And I would be happy to interact with folks, because honestly, Tim, knowing what you do, that you are educating educators, that to me is just awesome. So if there's any tips and tricks that I can clarify for folks, or they just have follow-up questions, I'd love to pass on whatever I know.
Well, that is really generous of you. Thank you so much, Drew. Really appreciate that. And I have to finish by bringing it back to the start by mentioning Leela one more time. I'm sure she's still listening. She talked about a song that you guys prepared earlier this year when we were at MTNA in Orlando. She mentioned a song called The Ground by Ola Yalo or J-Lo. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. So it's spelled like this, guys, O-L-A. And his last name, G-J-E-I-L-O. It's called The Ground. Go and listen to this track. It is amazing. And I hear you guys did a pretty good performance.
Oh, it's stunning. The music itself, I mean, if you can get anywhere close to performing it well, it will just transport people.
Yeah, I know Leela was really upset because one of the E flats on her piano was out of tune or something, and it was like used all the time in the piece of music. I thought it was very funny.
For non-discerning listeners, I'm sure it was just heavenly.
Yeah, right. No, go and listen to it. It's an amazing track, and that was one that connected me with both Drew and Leela, so I thought that was a good way to finish out. So, Drew, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Really appreciate your offer of more contact as well. We'll pop your church's URL in our show notes, and look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Thanks so much, Tim.
Well, I hope you learned something from my interview with Drew. It was great to share some time with him and grab some of those ideas that he has. And of course, if you did want to connect with him, then please head to our show notes page for more information. Now, I am very excited to let you know that if you are listening to this on the day it comes out, that would be the 19th, Friday the 19th of October 2018, then I'm very excited to let you know that tonight, if you're in the USA, we have our next live webinar running, and this one's all about Facebook advertising. And this will be relevant to you if you would like a few more students in your studio. And that's probably a lot of teachers out there. We all could do with a steady stream of new student inquiries coming in. Facebook advertising is one of the ways that you can make that happen. But I know it's really confusing. It's complex. A lot of people have wasted a lot of money doing it before, perhaps not had very much success. And so I want to stop that and solve that issue for you once and for all by inviting a very special guest to this webinar tomorrow or tonight, depending on where you are in the world, Andrea Vahl, who is an international superstar and Facebook advertising specialist. So the webinar is on Saturday, the 20th of October. That's 8 a.m. in Melbourne time, which is the 19th of October, 10 p.m. London, or 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on Friday the 19th. And we're going to be talking about things like deciding on goals for your ad, how to track whether they're working using the Facebook pixel, how to set up the demographic targeting, creating a piano studio strategy for Facebook ads, and talking about things like images and videos, and also, crucially, how to know if your ads are working and whether to either stop them, change them, or even spend some more money on them. So if you're interested to join us, head to timtopham.com/webinar. There is still enough time if you're watching or listening to this live as it's released at about 11 a.m. on Friday the 19th Eastern time. So I look forward to seeing you on that. Otherwise, next week, it's a case study of one teacher who's had huge fun and success using my free top 10 pop songs download. Have you used it in your studio? I've literally heard from hundreds of teachers who've made this one of their go-to downloads to have on their piano, and I have it on my piano for lessons all the time as well. So we're going to talk about what her teaching looked like before she found some of my resources and the impact that it's had on her teaching. We're also going to hear about one of her little seven-year-olds decided to play and sing Let It Be at her last recital to huge applause and success. The video she sent me of him playing and singing is about the cutest thing I've ever seen. Can't wait to share it with you. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.